I'm Kristen.
Hi, I'm Feeny. This is Brainstorm, and today we're here with
Chris Spencer, founder and CEO of Team Q.
Okay, fun fact. You are the third former NFL player I've met in less than a year.
Look at that.
Just happened stance. Didn't know that was on my bingo card for the last year. So interested to talk to you today, and thank you for coming, and want to dig into a little about you, who you are, what brought you to where you are today, your journey through the NFL, and then, of course, your company. So just a couple things we want to talk about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or, you know. Before, though, the other two that you've met, did it have who has?
They did not.
Okay. So, all right.
Yeah. So
you'll remember me. Then.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. All right.
Yeah. You took the first slot because of the hats.
Perfect.
Apologies to... I met Tim Tebow and Andrew East.
Okay. Yeah. I know Andrew East.
Mm-hmm.
Great guy. Great
he
guy.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah. They, not them, but somebody on behalf of them reached out to me because we rent our RV, and he and his wife, Sean Johnson, rented my RV and went to Gatlinburg with their family. And it was such a cool, random way to meet him at his house in his driveway, like shook his hand, showed him my RV, and then was like, okay, see ya.
Well, this, you can actually have two NFL players rent your RV because I'm looking at the Super Bowl right now and trying to get
hotels are crazy.
Hotels are nuts. And so just about 3 hours ago, I started looking at renting a big RV so I can put my team in.
I got you.
I need somewhere to put my team for hunt time. So.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's a fun way to, you know, go travel because you're staying at either a campsite or a parking lot, and you can tailgate, and, you know, it's a tiny house on wheels, so it's got everything right there.
Does a driver come along with it?
We can talk.
It's negotiable.
That happened.
4 days. Just need them for 4 days. You know? 4 days is all I need.
Yeah, so it's fun.
Yeah. We'll make sure he's fed.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk afterwards.
Okay, perfect.
But to start, if you want to talk a little bit, I'd love to hear your backstory, kind of where you grew up, and I guess we can start there and then just see where the conversation
is. Yeah, perfect. I'm a Southerner. I'm from Mississippi. Grew up in a little small town called Flora, and, you know, it was a farm town, and my great granddad had a bunch of acreage that we, you know, when him having 28 kids, my granddad was one of those 28, and the goal was to have these kids to farm because
28 kids.
Yeah, he had 28 kids.
Wow!
Oh my gosh, that's an entire town.
I know.
It's a big Christmas.
Yeah.
But we had so much land that he couldn't afford to pay people, so he just started having kids, and everybody worked the fields and
creating the workforce.
Right.
Yeah.
and so I grew up under that umbrella of working on a farm in Mississippi, and, you know, I was the oldest of five. My mom had five kids, and, you know, and growing up in Mississippi with that kind of lifestyle, I mean,
yeah,
it teaches you a lot of toughness and resilience when you're in Mississippi and it's 100 and some degrees and it's, you know, no shade, and you just have to get work done.
Yeah.
I, you know, for me growing up, yeah, you mentioned I played, you know, in the NFL, but it wasn't my first thing at top of mind. It was, how do I be like my granddad? He was one of those
hardworking.
Oh yeah. Renaissance man, you know, jack of all trades, you know, heavy machinery. And, you know, as a lot of little kids, it's like, you know, I want to drive a fire truck, or I want to get on a backhoe and dig and things. And so, you know, and so like the sandbox toys, you know, I was actually living in that world, and you know, football was far down the list for me.
Yeah.
Until my granddad ended up selling the farm, and we moved over to the next town. And my mom said, all right, well, you've been used to, you know, going down to the farm or doing some mechanic work. Now we got to get you into something that can keep you out of trouble.
Keep you busy. Yeah.
And she's like, all right. She grabbed me and snatched me into the coach's office and said, here, you have a football player.
And use him.
I was like, oh, okay. I've never played football really before. Just like kind of out in the backyard.
What age were you around that time?
I was in going into the fifth grade, I think it was.
Okay.
Fifth or sixth grade.
Gosh, you're still so young.
Yeah. And she was, you know, like, this is what we're doing. And you didn't challenge that. You just kind of like, yes, ma'am. And that's what I do. And so it was, it took a while to really like, you know, grasp the whole, like, you actually can play football. I think now when I'm looking back, you know, I was diagnosed as a kid with dyslexia. And I think because I was so good at it, that was my safe haven, you know? And so, and it took football a while to become that because it was new to me. And so that's probably more so why I wasn't part of this whole like, oh man, I really want to do this. And this is, you know, I could be really good at this. And I was so naive to it because, you know, I was safe over here doing this.
Yeah. So it was out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
My mom actually is dyslexic and she loves doing things with her hands because, you know, she wasn't excelling academically. So she's actually now a seamstress and, you know, like loves working with her hands. So I'm imagining, you know, being on the farm, you grew up with that. It was, you know, you're good at it.
When you're good at something and you know that you're not good at other things, you're kind of like, I'm going to stick with this.
This works. I'm not going to, why change it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Interesting. I just lost my train of thought. I was going to ask something along the lines of working out. Oh, so having done all of that as a child, do you still like to do those things today for yourself, like change your brakes or, you know, do any kind of mechanical work?
No, the cars now have gotten so complicated. Mm-hmm. When I was coming up, you didn't have all these. You're taking off a whole
gadgets,
whole like side of a car just to get to brakes. Now you have to do that. And I stay away from it. But I did everything I could to get away from the farm life and not having to work so hard. And like, you know, once it clicked for me, the football was like that outlet I could use to get a good education, get a job. I really started to dislike this whole like farming and that kind of work and found myself over the last, I guess now 5 years, I end up buying a farm and I spend, and it's like a safe haven now for me. It's like land therapy. I, you know, a couple hundred acres, I go out and get on my tractor, bush hog and plan, you know, I like to hunt. My kids like to fish and things like that. And so, you know, I'm out there on the tractor, discing up fields, setting food plots, and I do it all myself, you know. And
back to your roots.
Back to my roots. And it's so much fun because you don't realize when you're a kid, you're doing all this work, you can never see the end in sight, you know. And now, you know, having kids and busy life and, you know, work and all those different things, it's the one place that I can go and just like, oh my gosh, I got to bush hog about 30 acres today and I can see it to completion. I can actually start it where it just looks mess. And then all of a sudden I can look back and like, man, I got all that done today.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a good feeling because as you know, when you have kids, you know, it's never that way in the real world, in real life where you're like, man, I taught my kid this and they've done it the exactly the way I wanted them to do it.
Yeah.
No, it takes a lot of reps for them to do it. At least this thing I can like, man, I got it done. So, you know, I enjoy, I'm still an outdoors guy. I love to fish and hunt and, you know, be out with my kids, letting them, you know, get them out of city and not be on computers and iPads all the time playing video games. And so, you know.
That's great.
Yeah. So I get to teach them a little bit about my life. I can't force them because they're like, dad, no, not doing that kind of work.
No.
But I'm finding that, you know, the creativity that they have now, when you take away the structure play and allow them to go out and just like figure it out and you don't say anything, you don't force them to do anything. I've seen them now kind of grow into like, they get the walkie talkies now and they go to the farm and they just like cruising around. They bring a buddy out and they like, they're off. And so, so that's been fun to watch.
Aww. Yeah. I was gonna say that would be a great upbringing. Like, I mean,
Do you
I envy that.
Animals there too, or is it mostly just land?
Just land. You know, I let a guy, I lease some of it out to a guy to run some cows and stuff like that on, and so we can say we have
cows.
We have cows.
Cows by association. Yeah. You don't have to like.
Well, we do have some cows in the ecosystem, but not as many as these guys have. And then, you know, they have horses that we let run, and so my kids go out there and feed the horses and stuff like that. And so. So they get best of both worlds.
Yeah.
I get best of both worlds, so I don't have to take care of all of
it. Yeah. I love that it came full circle.
It did. I was shocked because I did everything I can to stay away from it. And I think about it every time I go out there And I get on the tractor. I'm like, you spent your whole life running from here this. And here you are.
Here's a safe place. Yeah. Well, you don't have 25 kids, do you? No.
Three. I have three kids. And I would say my third was a surprise. Well, but he's one of my favorites. So,
favorite.
Yeah. I have no idea how they did. I don't even know how my mom raised five kids. Yeah. You know,
crazy.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's busy.
Yeah.
Very.
Yeah.
Especially having one in sport. I don't know if your other siblings played sports, but that's a big commitment.
Yeah, I was the only one. My brother played a little bit, but not like a heavily, like I was in it. But and now I have three kids and all of them in heavily in sports. And I'm just like, can I find someone? One of you guys can just like butterflies or something.
Yeah. So when can one of you drive tonight? So that the other just took some of them
exactly
from A to B? So growing up, it sounds like you had, you know, some influences in your family. Who in your life do you feel as someone that you look up to or you go to as a mentor?
You know, that's a good question. My mom, believe it or not, you know, she had me when she was 16 years old. So we pretty much grew up together. So she was always like my go-to, you know, and my granddad was the guy that was over the top. That was like my mentor. Mm-hmm. And so my mom was my, you know, when you think about, you know, mother, son, she was like my friend in a sense, mm-hmm. but still like my mom, mm-hmm. because we could talk about everything, you know, everything that was happening in our lives, like, you know, losing a home or whatever it may be. We kind of was going through all that together. But my granddad was like my mentor because, you know, we didn't have much, you know, we grew up with not a lot at all. And he was always teaching us how to, you know, have the character, the integrity to do whatever you're doing. I want to teach you how to do it the best. If you're going to dig ditches, you're going to be the best at it. And I'm going to show you how to be the best at it. And so, you know, I give a lot of that credit to him. And, you know, just that he has so much wisdom where he would say things. And in the moment you're like, what is he talking about? I have no idea. And then as you go through a challenging time or life, it comes back up and you're like, that's what he meant. You know? And so those are the people that I love that they would never tell you what to do or how to do it. They would just show you how to do it. And then they get out the way and let you do it and figure it out. And then those teachings started to kind of come back. But my mom, she was my rock. And she's like, you know, just a special woman to, you know, have five kids and you know, not have the support of dads and have, you know, her sisters, you know, and to navigate a lot of challenging things at an early age where, you know, have a son diagnosed with dyslexia and not having tools and resources and the things that they wanted to do. To put me in special ed and all these different things that she wouldn't allow happen. And so to have that kind of foresight to keep me in a, you know, in a thriving place where it's going to be challenging, it's going to be hard, but once we get you to the real world, you'll thrive. And so I always, you know, look
That's
back
great.
On.
She was your advocate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So.
Moms are the best.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And thank goodness she set you up for football because, you know, that worked out well.
Worked out. It did. It worked out, you know, because football is a lot of timing and luck and preparation. You know, it's a lot to go into it because very small percentage make it to the next level. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It's That's both incredible. Physical and mental because I know you're a huge advocate for mental health. Mm-hmm. There's definitely, you know, yes, you can be physically great at something, but if you don't have the mental strength to, you know, be in that kind of high stress environment, I feel like, you know, not having a supportive mom or like something like that could really affect it. But, you know, your mom definitely set you up.
Yeah, sports is, it gives you so many great things and it gives you so many tools. And growing up on a farm, it gave me a lot of just mental toughness, mm-hmm. and not having gave me a lot of mental toughness. And then that mental toughness carried over to sports and the amount of things you put your body through from the workouts to, you know, to the games and the physical contact. And we are not even talking about now you're, you know, get out of high school, you get to college, and you, you know, your playbook gets bigger, and you get to the pros, and the playbooks get even bigger, and it becomes your job, and you got to study film, and you have to, now you got to learn how to take care of your body, you know, and while all of the outside things are still coming at you. And so, you know, I've actually been, it's been a interesting journey with the work that I'm doing in psychology, and starting to realize, like, at what point does mental toughness stop serving you, you know, and the, what I mean by that is that you can compartmentalize and box these things up and play through an injury, but at what point do you start to have anxiety or depression, or you get overwhelmed? And when you don't have the tools in your toolbox to actually manage that, then how do you then continue to do a job at a high level? And so, so we've been focusing a lot around how, you know, that you need the mental toughness to do the job. Yeah. Now, how do we start helping people understand that mental performance aspect? And when do you start using that to then balance and offset some of the mental toughness that you have, so that you can then, you know, no matter what kind of injury you have, you know, that you can figure it out, heal, whatever it may be, to be able to go back and play at a high level. And so, so it's been an interesting journey when you start talking about the mental aspect of the game and kind of getting outside of, you know, all of my experiences, because I can tell you I've had every injury you can think of, you know, herniated disc in back, torn quads, torn Achilles, you know, hand surgery, thumb surgery, you name it. And so, like, so obviously there was some mental toughness there, you know, but at a point it got to a place where just like from a mental aspect of things, I was starting to, it was really starting to show up in life. It was like, man, I can't handle this anymore. And that was, you know, in the time that I was growing up in football, there was no, you know, you didn't have a lot of areas of outlet for it's like, to be vulnerable, you know, and let those vulnerable pieces out to someone else without it being, you know, or feeling like it's going to get used against you. It could cost you your job. And so, and that's why a lot of the work that I do now is a lot focused around that, because we don't, our kids doesn't get enough reps anymore of the, how to do things. My son sits and watch how to bait a hook. You know, he watched thousands of videos on how to do that. And you ask him a question, hey, you need help to do this? No, I can do it myself. And then 2 seconds into it, he's like, hey, Dad, can you help me do this? And I was like, well, you just said you watched 1,000 videos. You have you know how to do it. And it just it was a reminder for me that no matter how many, no matter where technology is going, what it's doing, you need the reps. And if they if you're not getting the reps, then you're not learning how to critically think. You're not how to learning how to use your mental performance in ways that is going to help you thrive in whatever you're doing. And so it's been a fun journey for me to kind of really focus on that. And obviously, I'm just super passionate about it because I've lived real life experience of it. So
you've lived it, and now you've been able to turn that into a business, you know, so that's, can you, for those that don't know about it, can you kind of talk about the business and, you know, what kind of led you to start it?
So my business, the name of it is Team Q, and it's for team intelligence. And that's a playoff EQ and IQ. And part of that has to do with is making people aware of their attributes and who they are and what makes them tick. What are those intangible things that you have that people can't see that you need to continue to work on and develop? And so when you start to look at the ecosystem, when I was retiring from football, 75% of guys were broke or divorced within 5 years, which is a really high number. Particularly when you look at, you know, a lot of guys are educated, you know, and we can debate on how many classes certain guys go through, but you have to be eligible to play at the end of the year. And so that means you got to show up. And there's not a lot of people that really like football players on campus, especially academics. So, so I would say, you know, when you start to look at that aspect, and then particularly in football where you have to go to school for 3 years, you know, where's that crack? Where's that, you know, what's happening where we are having such a high number of athletes, you know, having these issues at the end of their career? And so I started looking into what teams were doing when it came to Likert scale assessments, behavior assessments, whether that was TAPS or Myers-Briggs and things like that. And started to realize, diving into the research of it, a lot of these assessments were created in corporate America, and that's just not the football world. Mm-hmm. You know, you got kids coming from inner cities, rural, you know, middle class, upper class, you name it. And so it was a population that was all over the place and really tough to profile, and it's really tough to take an assessment that was created in that kind of environment, mm-hmm. and then bring it into sports. And so how do you really get to understand the human inside an athlete from their environment? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, wasn't the track that I thought I was going to be on, but started really get interested in learning about language and what language tell us about our body and who we are as a person. It was interesting, you know, 60% of our language is made up of function words. That's like I, they, of, and we don't even think about it. It comes from our subconscious because it's been there for so long ingrained in us that you don't have to think about it. Mm-hmm. And so where you start to think and where it starts to get outside of who you are when you get into your content words, things that, you know, like you asking me an interview question and you frame it in a way that brings me back into my childhood or whatever it may be. And so that's where people get stuck and focus on. Mm-hmm. But they never pay attention to the uhs and days and I. And that's why as humans, it's hard for us to do interviews and get outside of the singular focus of mm-hmm. emotional connection. Or do they remind me of someone that like me? And so that's what we get distracted at. And so we've been working on a platform that can take that language and analyze words that you say, words that you've written. As long as it's words that you've spoken or written, we can analyze it and build about 8 data points on you, from personality behaviors to stress tolerance, anxiety, to thinking styles and communication styles, using one language set versus having you sit down for 45 minutes and take a personality assessment, mm-hmm. or an hour to take a different personality assessment, mm-hmm. or another hour to take a behavior assessment, or another hour to take, you know, you name it. There's a lot of different assessments, but nothing that is able to look at multiple frameworks, mm-hmm. using one framework of language. And so we've been building that platform now, and it's evolved a lot because of AI. We started in AI. This is not a new thing. Mm-hmm. Just in work, you start using social media data, and it was working really good for a bit. And then once you start to get outside of the US, It started to dive off. Mm-hmm. And then NIL happened, the transfer portal happened, you know, and so now kids are able to pay someone to help them figure out their social media and mm-hmm. curate the language. And so we had to kind of move away from that and go back to, you know, what does true language say? What is the true language models? Or what does literature say about language, and focus there? And so now we're in a really good spot, and we've been able to do it where we can scale it down to, you know, 14-year-olds, so that we can get back to development and get back to making younger kids aware that your intangibles are those things that are going to set you apart. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we've been so focused for a long time on the technical, tactical, physical aspect of who an athlete is, that's done really well. But that mental aspect of it is not just the mental IQ of the game, but the mental aspect of who am I? Mm-hmm. What makes me tick? If I'm a decommunicator and I'm communicating with people and I'm rubbing people the wrong way, but I'm not aware of it, mm-hmm. how do I fix it?
Yeah,
right.
And so now you're making people aware of these aspects of themselves, that as they are growing into different environments, that they realize that, oh, my skills are transferable. Mm-hmm. You know,
so you kind of like package this data in a consumable way for that person. Mm-hmm.
So we take the data, we analyze it, and then we spit out scores and ranges of where they're falling. And and whether you're a fire starter or you're a commander or you're an influencer, you get where you are. And based off your makeup, we're able to tell you things to watch out for based off how you respond in these areas, tips on how to improve. And then we get into how does that dynamic show up within a team. And so think about that as from a corporate standpoint. You're doing this when you go into a job. Mm-hmm. Now we're doing this with kids. And so about time they get to that place, they'll be able to then know when they're interviewing for a job, they'll be able to speak the language in a way that helps them figure out what teams that they should be working with and how to work with certain people versus just now getting introduced to it once you get to that world. And so it's been a interesting journey, and it's been fun building it. And I just, you know, the impact that I think we'll have with making people aware of it and then also allowing them to get reps in their environment. And so offering up suggestions on how to show up in certain situations with a friend or a coach in these situations is only building their repetition of I can do this well later in life. Mm-hmm. So.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Very interesting. Especially your comment as to how AI is now changing that language piece. Like you're saying, like, you don't know if that person wrote it or if their assistant wrote it or if a combination of AI and an assistant wrote it. Like, how can you now analyze, you know, who they are as a person? And having to adapt to that must be a challenge. Are you able to look at or analyze, I guess, video speech as a way to go around that?
Yeah. So within our platform, we've for verification things, we've allowed a player or an athlete to upload a video of themselves speaking. And that gives us our foundation. And then from that foundation, then we can go and look at anything they've done. So this podcast, we can take this podcast and analyze, and I can give you a report on myself, you know, any type of press conference and things like that. And so it's used in a way to help you as a person. It's not about this has been sent out to all these different people. This is about you and like how you're presenting, because how we talk and how we write is different. Mm-hmm. How we talk to text, how we, you know, we elaborate more when we talk to text. We think, we process more when we type in something. And when you are looking at it from that language lens, you know, now you can really see how a person actually present versus the bias that we introduce when we do a Likert scale assessment. Again, those assessments have been great for a long time, you know, and there's inherent biases in those where, you know, from a social standpoint, if I'm asked to rate myself or compare myself to someone else, and that person I may think is amazing, and so they may be a 10, and I'm going to say, well, I'm not that great, so I'm going to give myself a 4. In reality, I may be a 7. And so I've already introduced my own bias into how I answer that. My bias of, you know, or what mood I'm in the day that I'm taking this assessment. Mm-hmm. It's a quick snapshot. Yeah. And so, you know, trying to remove some of those things so that we can get a truer sense of who people are. Because, you know, I know when I was a kid and having dyslexia and all that, when I was up for interviews with NFL teams, things like that, I wasn't going to tell them about that. I didn't want to tell them about that. And what I realized that it probably, especially going into college, probably hurt me more than it helped me, because I didn't tap into the resources that are available. And most people don't realize in NFL, there's a lot of resources, a lot. But when you don't know who you are, you don't want people to know certain things about you, then you don't tap into resources that can help you make transitions or help you in situations that you're in, whether it's family, friends, or whatever it may be. So I get it. And I also think that, you know, lived it, I can now lend an ear to a kid who is trying to cover up and hide things and not realizing that the supports are there to help you. And there is a stigma around, like, you know, do they use it against me? Those things do happen in some occasion. But overall, you know, the resources are there to really help you. But there's not hand holding resources. They're not going to hold your hand because I'm paying you millions of dollars now.
Yeah.
And so I can't tell you what to do. It's like, you got to figure it out. And so how do we help that in that environment where these resources are just, I mean, we have some amazing resources. How do I now understand myself and say, oh, I need to use this. I need to do this, 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 and this. Mm-hmm. And then I get to pick and choose what time I want to do those. But I know exactly what I need now and how to help support myself, advocate for myself. So,
right. I mean, I'm not a professional athlete, but I feel like a lot of people could benefit from this kind of self-awareness that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm thinking there's a lot of people, myself included, that it'd be very interesting to see, you know, how this data would affect the corporate lifestyle.
Regular people.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because this is not about sports. It's about people. Mm-hmm. Sports is just where, you know, have a lot of relationships, and I can actually build out use cases so that we can really see what the data is doing and telling us, and so we can figure out where to go. But corporate is next on the list. You know, we've done use cases in some corporate situations just for some friends and, you know, who's working on building teams and things like that. And we know it works in that space. But as you learn, especially as a mind like mine, where it's like, I want to do everything.
Yeah.
I want to do it all, you know, but as I've kind of gotten a little bit more wise in the space and making sure that I'm very poignant on the things that we're doing and how we're doing it, so that, you know, when we are expanding into different verticals, that we have systems and processes in place that helps us, you know, not flop in there. Because that's the other side of me, is like, I don't want to fail.
Yeah, scale too quickly, and then you're trying to be everything to everyone, and you're nothing to no one. So, yeah.
Right. And on the other side of it, it's like, I'm, you know, again, fortunate to play in the sport as long as I did. Like, it's easier. I mean, it's harder to get into sports, and it's hard to athletes are probably some of the hardest to profile, because you have so many different variables, from education, from environments, to, you know, traumas, whatever it may be. And so, not saying that it's not the same in the corporate world, but the education level kind of balances the scale a little bit more when you get to that corporate space, and like the goals and what they're, you know, business wise, what you're looking to do is a little different than it is in the sports space. And so, so it's, eventually we're headed that way. But you know, my goal is, cause I started this to help figure out how we decrease this number of athletes being there. And so I want to make sure that's in a good spot before I take off. And
sure.
I realize you got to go back. You know, it's going to be years before we see the outcomes of it, because, you know, we started on the professional side, NFL, Major League Baseball and all that. But you realize that change kind of really starts early in life, because you get the tools now versus getting the tools later.
Right.
I mean, I remember myself at 21, you know, all of a sudden signed a big contract.
It's like,
no one could tell me anything. It's like, I'm not listening to that. So,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, you think you know everything.
What is this guy? I go to a restaurant and they give me a table. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You're not listening to that. And so, so I get it. I think any 21-year-old, you get that kind of money, what you're, you know, it's not till years later you're thinking like,
your brain's not even fully developed.
No. Yeah. And so,
we're going to spend it.
Yeah. And so, getting it, capturing a population of kids that are, their goal is to get to that next level. Mm-hmm. So they're willing to do the work.
Yeah.
The parents is willing to help their kids, set their kid up for success. And so, you know, that's why I think we can start to really make a difference.
Do you have, and you don't have to give names, but do you have a use case that you're most proud of in your company with the research that you've done, where you've said they started here and now they're here and we help them to do that?
Yeah, we have, you know, a lot of use cases, but it's a team effort, because it's, you know, we're not touching a lot of the players daily. Mm-hmm. And so our market has been the professionals for so long. But now we're starting to get back into the high school space. So that's going to take time to see some of that transition. But from that professional level, like being able to flag a lot of these things and then working with the teams and having them say, hey, these are the resources you need to put in place. This is what this player needs. And then seeing those things happen, you know, and again, not in all cases, but some cases, seeing it happen. And, you know, I can't say a name, but it's just so excited for a young man who was trending in the wrong direction. And then the team stepped in and put things in place that then helped set them up for success. And then they go on and make Pro Bowls and do things. And it's like, you know, and that's what the tool is supposed to be used for. Mm-hmm. And it's taking time to get to a place where you know, tools like this is used in a way that you meant it to be. We have lots of use cases in that framework. And I'm really excited for that, for the younger population to really see that growth, because, you know, we're allowing them to take the assessment because their brains are still developing. So, you know, 14, 18, your brain is still very malleable, still developing. And so I'm really excited to see the growth and allowing these kids to take it twice a year, time stamping their first one, seeing the second one, seeing where they've grown at, and then continue on throughout high school. I think that's going to be really fun data and interesting data. Yeah, you know,
for sure. Course.
And then what are the companies looking at that kind of growth for a person that early and being able to track and show them that they're improving? And so so we'd be, you know, over the next 4 or 5 years would be a really exciting time to see where all this lands and see what type of resources that really become the resources to help people. Because I think there's a misconception around mental health. It's everything is not mental health. I think there's real mental health, and I think there's real mental performance. Mm. And if you don't have the mental performance, it can lead into some real mental health.
Yeah.
Outside of the real mental health pieces. And I think that's what we are falling into. And so if we can start to really train that mental performance aspect, we may be able to also decrease some of the things that get lumped into the bucket of mental health. Like, you know, anxiety. How do I manage my anxiety?
Right.
You know, and again, those things are real. Trust me.
Yeah.
Starting a company and pouring my own resources, all my resources in there into it, you know, building this thing from the ground up. Like, there's a lot of times I wake up like panicking.
Imposter syndrome is so real.
So real.
A company, and every time you're like, am I doing this right? And then you realize no one knows what they're doing and they're all just faking it till they make it.
So those things are real, you know, but I've been fortunate along the way to work with a lot of psychologists and really get the tools to say, you know, like, be able to work through those things. And I think if you don't address it, and you, again, like I said, if you keep boxing it up, putting it aside, the mental toughness, I can push through it. If I took that mentality, if I kept that mentality, then all of a sudden, like, now those anxieties turn into a much bigger mental health issues for me. And so
that's an interesting point, how, you know, some of what you're trying to educate, whether it's a professional sports player or a kid in high school that's also in sports, maybe focused on academics, how does the physical performance feed into some of what you're doing? Obviously, in football, there's a lot of aggression. And, you know, with the mental performance aspect, aggression maybe isn't the word that comes to mind when I think about, you know, getting better mentally in your performance. So how do you kind of balance those two things?
So we actually, that's our Q4 project that we're going to start looking at performance data, because we've done a lot of research around language and what language says about, you know, performance and injuries and increasing your performance in certain aspects of the task and things that you're doing. And so that's going to be a project that we're going to start then to figure that out, because, you know, when you can track language over time, it tells you a lot. Mm-hmm. Language over time can tell you when you're going to start to get sick. Language over time can tell you when you're going to start to get injured. Language over time is going to tell you when you start to have burnout. Like, so there's so many aspects of it that, you know, we're still just kind of learning and tapping into that. I think over the next couple of years that it's going to be some interesting studies, case studies come out of this. But from a performance standpoint and outside of that physical, again, that's the aggression piece of it is it falls into that bucket. It's a physical outward thing, but it's also an internal thing of like, you have to have some aggression to play at that level. You have to have that. But then that balance of like, how do you flip that switch when you exit the field? And that's part of this awareness of, you know, who am I and how do I manage, you know, these feelings that I get that I'm starting to feel like, oh, well, this is carried with me off the field.
Yeah.
But now I'm able to identify it and recognize it and then, you know, work through it or, you know, maybe talk to somebody or, you know, have a mentor that I can talk to or just have breathing techniques. I'm really big into meditation and breathing. And you think it's all, especially as a former athlete, you think it's a hokey thing, but man, it does wonders really fast for you.
Yeah.
And so a lot of those aspects are going to be, you know, is going to start getting incorporated into what we're, you know, trying to teach our kids.
Yeah.
Did you, as an athlete, obviously, before you got into this business and kind of doing the research that you have done now, knowing what you know, did you have like a routine that you did as like a on the field, off the field, like to kind of get yourself out of that mindset? Were you kind of already doing that as a player, or is are you more thinking about yourself with like hindsight's 2020?
Yeah, I'm thinking about myself as well. No, there was a breaking point where I told this story not too long ago, but I was, because of my mental toughness, I was able to push through everything. I broke my hand and played 3 more plays in and got a shot, cast, didn't miss a play, finished the game, had surgery the next day. So the mental toughness aspect of it, I played through everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I broke my thumb, put a cast on a Wednesday, snapped with my left hand on a Sunday. You know, never snapped a day in my life with my left hand.
But you're like, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, it's like, because I, you know, that mindset, that short-sighted mindset is like, you know, I can't fail. My granddad was always, don't embarrass the last name. You know, it's my last name. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to show up and do the things the right way. And so always having that in my head that I don't want to fail, like made me push through all kinds of things that I probably shouldn't have. But at the same time, there becomes a breaking point. And my breaking point was we were playing, I think it was like 2010. We were playing Oakland Raiders. And I started to get stingers where, like, you know, your neck get put in the wrong position and then it pinches a nerve and it sends sharp pains down your hand. And I've had them before. I've had one before, but, you know, before I started to get a lot of injuries and it was kind of like that was weird.
I'll get over it.
But this time it was starting to happen, like, every time I would go to engage a guy. And it just kept zinging down my arm and I was just like... And then I was too stubborn to tell my trainer. And so I finished the game. And I think I ended up with probably like 14 stingers. And the nerve damage that I could have caused, you know, could have been detrimental.
Significant.
But I remember sitting in the training room the next day and I was talking to my head trainer. And he was asking me something and he just see it on my face that I was in that. Really? I think the team doctor and the coaches were around or whatever. And I wouldn't say anything.
They're hiding something.
He pulled me into his office and he's like, he didn't even ask me any questions out there. He just said, hey, I want you to talk to this sports psychologist. I think you'll really benefit from it. And that was the moment that I realized, like, this mental toughness that I had was starting to leak. Mm-hmm. It's starting to seep. And so I can look back over before that time and tell you I was just young and dumb, just doing things that I, you know, felt like I had to because I didn't want to fail.
Sure.
And then... fast forward to having that conversation the first time with a psychologist. Because again, like, you don't want to be the guy to know that you talk to a psychologist, you know.
Yeah.
Again, this is a different world now. A lot of kids now early on have psychologists, you know, especially baseball kids and golf kids. And but at the time, like, I'm not.
You don't want to be that guy.
And, I told him in his office, I said, the only way I talk to a psychologist if no one knows about it. The owner, the GM, and like we got a pinky promise
behind closed doors.
Promise right now, and she can't be from Seattle. And so he ended up connecting me with a psychologist out of Toronto, and that I talked to, and she was phenomenal. Walked me through my whole thought process and how to really kind of manage these aspects of, like, you know, you playing a tough sport, you're going to get injured, and it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay that someone knows that you're hurt.
It's okay not to be okay.
Right. Yeah. You know, and so as I started to build on my tools from her and how to work, get my mind through these aspects, because I was set myself up for failure and didn't realize it because I was telling myself, you can't get hurt. You can't get hurt. You know, you can't let this person down. As I'm standing over the ball, pointing out Mike linebacker, safeties rolling down, changing plays and doing all these different things, I'm still, these thoughts are going on in my head. And I think, you know, once I start to work on that and learn that, man, like, my whole career could have been different if I had these skills, you know, early in my life. So it was a combination of the experience and then the learning that realized that, this is something that I think I want to do. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, I really didn't know until, you know, it just it just kind of fell in my lap of, you know, this is a real, it can be a real thing to really help people. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Cause you didn't have it, and you being able to provide that for young athletes and athletes that are, you know, struggling. I think that's so, I'm sure it's an emotional experience sometimes.
It's very emotional because I have a 15-year-old son. He has high functional autism, and we use a lot of these conversations and tools with him, who's a good athlete. It's really weird because my wife was an All-American volleyball player. All my kids were really good athletes. And we've never forced them or pushed them to do it. And my son decided he just wanted to be a football player. Oh my gosh.
Don't do this to me.
You don't remember all the nights I was laid up here with ice and but again, the things that I learned, I can't tell him he can't. And so, and he has the gene pool and the work ethic to actually do well. And so, so it gets emotional for me now having conversation with him on a daily of how to take care of your body, how to take care of your mental, how to be a good teammate and leader, figuring out who are you as a leader, you know, like he's a very quiet kid, but he works hard. And how do you become a lead by example type leader while being able to still hold your teammates accountable and not be the kid that just like, I'm just going to be quiet. Hopefully people follow me. But also when you speak, it is impactful in the right times. And so, so it's been, you know, this fun thing. And like my kids, so our new module we released for high school players called Player Q and for player intelligence. And so, he took it the other day, and he was like, Dad, this is weird. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, how does this thing know who I am? I'm like, well, it's usually your language to help you. He's like, I said, does all of it make sense? He's like, well, I don't think I do this over here. And then I point out give him an example of some things that he's done. He's like, oh, yeah, I guess it's right.
I guess. Yes, that's right. I'm like,
and then he's a D communicator. He's, again, when you have a kid that's on the spectrum, he's more than Asperger's. He's very like, direct. He don't care how you feel about what he's saying. He don't care anybody feel about what he
speaks
saying.
Speaks the truth.
Yeah. And so, which has been a challenge to kind of teach him how to have a little tact without making him not feel like, you know, not feel authentic in who he is. Mm-hmm. And so when he's reading what it says about, you know, being a decommunicator, and then how to be a decommunicator in an environment where not everyone's a decommunicator. He's just like, Oh, that makes sense. I could do that. Okay. You know, so it's been emotional to see it in real life, and especially, you know, with my kids, and they're doing it. And we've done a bunch of, pilots with some high schools, and to hear the feedback from the kids, I'm like, man, this is really cool.
That's so great.
I've been able to sit down with my coach, and my coach thought I was being a jerk, and he's now able to see me in a different light because of this. And so, some of the feedback that we've been getting from has been really cool to see.
Awesome. You're teaching not only the kids more about themselves and how they can kind of adapt and maybe play to their strengths, but you're also teaching their coaches or teachers or
parents,
like this is why your kid might say things the wrong way or act out when this habit, like there's benefits to a lot of the people that surround the person that you're focused on.
And I think those are the seeds that we want to plant, is because now when you're able to advocate for yourself, then people can really start to understand who you are. Mm-hmm. And so like as a parent, you know, I'm spending all my time in a gym training their physical, but you know, how many tools are right now that my kids is using to help them understand like who they are. I can't get my son to sit down and take a 45-minute personality assessment. Not doing it. But you meet them where they are with technology, and we're able to. We've created a Coach Carter, who's an interviewer that would interview your kid, ask them anywhere between 6 to 10 open-ended questions, where they don't have to like try to get something right, they can just tell the experience, and like whether it's, you know, what sport you're playing, you know, who's your favorite teammate and why, like asking them just really simple open-ended questions that can have some impactful language to help them get better in areas. And so it's really not about what language is collected. It's just as long as your language and what you've been able to elaborate on what your experience is. Mm-hmm. And so that's been, you know, really interesting and fun to be able to meet young athletes where they are, and not just young athletes, because how many times you sit on your phone and you like look at a video and it's like 10 seconds, you're like, next. So I think we, as just a societal thing now, is, you know, everything has to be so fast, so quick, and so
quick content,
creating something that we could meet anyone and be able to collect language and then give them some positive on the other side of it. Mm-hmm. It's been a treat. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sure it's fascinating. Have you done the test, like, as, you know, as you've created the company, have you kind of like tested yourself along the way?
Oh yeah. I test myself. We do new, you know, my CEO and I, like, he was picked, you know, cause we are able to run this language and then layer our data over top of each other to figure out where our blind spots may be.
Oh, nice.
And so we're able to do a lot of that. And with teammates that are coming on, just depending on what the focus is and how you need to, you know, what we're trying to accomplish, we are pairing teammates that way. And so we're doing it within our company, you know, practicing what we preach. And,
you know, my
CEO knows that I'm like very, very out there on thoughts and things. And he's able to, he was the guy that I picked because he had this agreeableness level that he knew how to help you. His agreeable scores, he can agree with you without agreeing with you and boxing what you have and putting it on the shelf, and then also knowing how to pull it off the shelf when it's time to use it. And so it was interesting looking at his dynamic and my dynamics from a scoring standpoint to say, okay, this guy's going to work well with me. Mm-hmm. And he's been fantastic. A guy named Scott Pace. He's come out the corporate world and, you know, and now he's leading the charge on what the product and what that's looking like and the areas that we're going to focus on moving forward. And so it's a practice what we preach, where we are. So
amazing. Yeah. What did that transition look like from being a professional athlete to being a business owner? Like, you know, entrepreneurship is not for the faint of heart.
How'd you meet? Did your COO fall into your life?
He just fell in my life April of last year.
Okay.
Very new. But this whole journey of being being my own boss, when you're playing professional sports, like, you know, what you don't realize at the time is that you've been told what to do pretty much your whole life, mm-hmm. where to be, here's your schedule, what food you need to be eating, you know, what time to wake up, all these different things. And then, you know, I equate that as like, this is like this tunnel. And all of a sudden, like, you throw a grenade down this tunnel and the tunnel blows up. And then you have like no more information, nothing, no one telling you what to do. And then you're stuck there just sitting there trying to figure out, all right, what do I do? You know, and that transition for me was, as a guy who was very, very motivated to do something new and excited to do something new, I found myself sitting at my desk for hours and hours trying to figure out, what do I do right now?
What is my life?
I had a goal, what I wanted to do, but it was like, how do I do that? You know, how do I build my own schedule? Mm-hmm. Like, what do I focus on first? And, you know, when do I take a break? When do I take a lunch break?
Seems like, you know, would be like top of mind for most people, but like someone who's never used to that, you're like, someone tell me what to do.
Where's my schedule?
You know, and then you get to, you know, you get into the middle of the day and you're like, oh, I think it's time for a nap. I never napped before, you know? And so so it took, you know, a good, you know, month or two to really figure out how to really organize and prioritize what things you need to do and how to do it. And, you know, what conversations are important, what's not. And, you know, how do you handle the highs and lows? Because you got to remember, we're used to when someone, you ask for something, boom, it's done.
Yeah.
When you talk to someone, boom, it's set up, it's ready to go. To now meeting with someone and then you're like, hey man, this is a good idea. This is a good thought, like, let's go. We're making this happen, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, then you don't hear from somebody for 6 months and you're like, I'm not used to this. I'm not used to being on the side where just like, stiff arm. We'll talk about it another time.
Yeah.
We're just not ready yet. But it took a while to kind of realize, like, you know, you're in a different world. There's a flow to it. There is a process to it. And you start to understand the process, especially when you get into you having a product and you having sales cycles and things like that. And not everyone's ready to buy at these times. And, you know, how do you receive no? Because you've never really been told no your whole life. And so, you know, so it was a good exercise. I would say that it was a challenging exercise at first, but it was something that, as you know, as a center, you're used to, you know. Eli Manning come up to the line of scrimmage. I was his center at Ole Miss. He come up to the line of scrimmage. He makes an adjustment. Center makes an adjustment really quickly. Get everybody else on the same page. You were used to that.
You do it.
Matt Hasselbeck comes up and he may change the play 3 or 4 times. And you're like, you know, you got to go opposite. And then he comes back and say, no, take it off. And then you have to make those adjustments pretty quickly. And so I have been trained to make pivots fast and make adjustments mentally. And so I was able to finally kind of get back and say, okay, here's what I want to do. Let's be ready to move. Let's make slow decisions. But when we make them, let's make fast decisions. And then if it's the wrong decision, we're going to be faster to pull the plug. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I've treated my entrepreneur journey, is that when things are not working, gone. New idea, okay, that didn't work, okay, it's gone. And then, you know, and they haven't all gone great.
That's part of entrepreneurship.
I've learned a lot, and really, really, you know, I was sitting down with John Ingram, is a guy who's done some investment with me, and, you know, having a conversation with him and realizing that as a young entrepreneur and you're trying to figure this thing out, how many people get to a place and they quit. And he, you know, he's constantly letting me know, you know, you have a passion for this. Don't let it beat you. Mm-hmm. And that's been one of the key things that I've always kind of like just keep stirring in the back of my mind, is like, don't let it beat me. When you want to just lay it down and move on to something else, I can go get a sales job. I can, you know,
we can always fall back. Yeah.
Right. You know, but I think I have too much passion for it, and I think it's going to be very impactful for a lot of people. And so it's shaped me. This journey has definitely shaped me into, I think, a better person. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, a better father, a better husband, because it's taught me a lot of skills along the way that I have, but it brought it to the surface in ways that I didn't realize that it could get there. So
you can harness them because you're aware of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that, yes, your software in, you know, understanding people's strengths and weaknesses is helpful in academia and it's helpful in sports. But ultimately, it sounds like, you know, like if someone has these resources starting from such a young age, when they get to, you know, the end of their athletic career, they're then aware to then, you know, become an entrepreneur, start a company. And I feel like that's going to be a fascinating journey to watch for.
Well, I've done the research. 62% of high school athletes go on to work in a Fortune 100 company, a Fortune 500 company.
Wow.
62%.
That's higher than I would think.
Yeah.
Why? Because of the skills that they learn in sports, teamwork, you know, constructive criticism, discipline, all those things carry over into that world. And so you get to that stage of that transition out of high school. And we're just talking about high school. We're not even talking about college. Mm. You get to that stage of high school and you're going to transition out into these different things. Now you know what you're about, what your skill sets are. And so if you're an entrepreneur type person, like, you know that you can go take this path and you have the resilience to actually push through it. Versus a person that says, you know what, my journey is to go lead a team, you know, for this corporation, or my skill set is to go sell the heck out of it. I don't want to be elevated to running a team because that's not my skill set. And I think that's where I think that's where we, I think as companies, we kind of put people in bad situations because you're really good at sales. Now all of a sudden it's like, you should run the sales team because it's about a job title and the money versus like, okay, how do we increase the money for this person to stay doing what they're doing and finding the right people that can sit in that seat where we don't have all this turnover because, you know, you have to be a lead. You have to be a real leader in these spaces. I mean, we see it all the time right now in the NFL where, you know, the coaches that thrive are the coaches that are leader of men, not the gurus who are really good at calling plays or calling defense, but they're good at those things, but they're really good at being a leader of men. And when I say men, women, all of those things where you just understand people and how to navigate with people. And so
I think Ted Lasso's of the world.
Yeah. And humans now are all about experiences and what gets them up to go to work. It's not about how when our parents growing up, it's like
you didn't have a choice.
Right. And so, you know, how are we as a society really, you know, shifting to that mentality, I think is important.
Yeah. So what are some ways as you're now expanding into younger age kids in high schools, what are some ways that your company gets involved in school systems? Are you marketing yourself to them or what's that process look like?
That's a really good question. We actually just brought on a community relation person. And part of that is, you know, when you start to look at these tools, you know, these things, especially in sports, can become elitist. When you start looking at some of the sports that are, you know, gear is expensive, hockey, football gear. You know, the only sport that really is not that expensive is like soccer. You put a ball down, you're going to hit, you know, and so, you know.
I can argue that, but.
I'm with you. Travel soccer. We're talking about throwing the ball on the ground and that, kids go out and play. But at the same time, when you start to look at what we're, you know, again, my passion and where I grew up and how I grew up is to make sure no athlete is left out. And so, a lot of our focus around the school aspect is having a community relation person, having sponsors to be able to sponsor kids in rural and inner city areas to come alongside us to make sure these kids have access to the platform, which then innately puts us in relationship with schools. And so that is part of our community relationship job is to work with schools, talk to principals and football coaches and baseball, whatever sports, you know, athletic directors, and start to get awareness around what percentage of kids are having struggle with their overall well-being, where it's come from, you know, their character or their leadership styles or the communication styles, things that are getting them in trouble or things that are a kid is good at excelling in, but just need a little bit more awareness around in this area. And so we've brought this person on about 2 months ago, and we're starting to compile a lot of data. And again, it's easier for us to start here in Nashville, and schools around the Nashville area. And now we're starting, now that we have the data and what we know what we're looking for, what we're trying to accomplish, we're bringing sponsors on to sponsor certain areas for kids. And it's happening really quickly because we're, you know, starting to get calls from other states and to have this conversation because everyone is looking for tools and it's this really unique tool that is outside of the box of what most people are used to when it comes to like, you know, most people focus on services. You know, this is a tool that puts a lot of the onus back into the kid's hand. I'm going to take this assessment. I'm going to look at this. If I want to get better, if I continue to have the same output, then wait a minute. I have something that I can kind of lean back in to see how do I change that output and when I'm ready to change that output. And so so it puts us in a very unique space, place when it comes to working with schools. And it's not the traditional, because it technically kind of falls into the educational bucket.
Yeah.
Because you're educating people about these aspects that may, things that may get them in trouble in school.
Yeah.
You know, how not to continue to show up. And so, We're getting there. We're slowly kind of building that out, but excited about the relationships that we're starting to get right now with a lot of the schools that we're communicating with.
Yeah, that's, I'm sure, fits into their kind of health, wellness, initiatives within schools. I wouldn't imagine you have too many competitors in that space doing, not like what you're doing anyway, because the standardized personality tests, those have been around since, you know, I remember taking them. Yeah. Said I should be a dentist. Like, that's what kids are used to taking. Right. But your model is very unique. And so are you encountering like competition when you have these conversations, or is it sort of like a...
Indirectly, yeah. Because like you said, these other things have been around for so long, and that's what people know. Mm-hmm. And so when you're doing cutting edge things, it takes time to educate. Mm-hmm. And so we've been on an educational piece of educating why using language is beneficial for what we're looking for in this generation of kid versus my mom's generation.
Pick A, B, C, or D.
You know, right. Yeah. You know, and so so it's these indirect competitors, and you know, but we'll put our science and literature behind everything they would do. Everything that we do is very transparent, mm-hmm. very open. And when you have that, it makes it easier for people to trust you, and then also trust the fact that he did it for a long time, you know, and have a lot of people that's on this team that has done it for a long time. Mm-hmm. And
there's trust there.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have that early on trust because we've done it. But there's still also the education component that people also look for. And so.
Sure.
Yeah.
Educate the educators.
Yes.
On your research.
It's a thing.
To then use and educate kids. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
I'm curious about, like, you spent most of your professional life as an athlete where you exercise and train to like the highest degree of, so like, has there been an adjustment moving out of exercise being like a prime, like a, it's almost a like job, one of the key tools of like your existence professionally, like that's no longer the case now. Like, have you had a hard time adjusting with like general wealth, health and exercise?
No, because my exercise became, bourbon tasting.
Doing some curls.
So I'm doing, you know, no, I'm just joking. But, no, it's definitely has shifted from the, you know, I was a 700 pound squatter in high school, you know, so.
In high school?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. As a junior.
How much do you weigh in high school?
So yeah, I was 315 in high school.
Okay. But still that's more than double your body weight.
I was, you know, I played in the league at 315, between 315 and 320.
You trust your spotter at that point? Like,
you know what? My
just on your own.
My strength coach at the time, he was like this really mechanical guy. So he created lifts, this lift system for me.
Oh.
Because I was starting to get so strong, and so he had these systems in place that would catch it if something were to happen. But
he's like, I don't want to be responsible for that.
Yeah,
put it in the hands.
Definitely not.
Yeah,
but nothing ever happened because I, you know, 700 pounds.
Because. Like,
so when you said football wasn't initially like your first thing, I mean, at a certain age, when you see those kinds of numbers, it's like not up to you anymore. It's like someone's going to make you play football,
right?
Well, and actually, the real story that got me to play that got me to focus on football was I was pouring concrete one summer in the Mississippi, Meridian, Mississippi, and it was hot. We was pouring these apartment complexes, and my job was to scoop the concrete out of a tractor bucket, haul it up a ladder, pour it into these stairs, and then had a guy come behind me troweling the concrete. And so about midday, I think it's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it is hot. Humidity up in like 95, it's 100 degrees, humidity around 90, something like that. Yeah. And I remember scooping, going up the ladder and almost fainted because I was so hot. And I remember getting it poured and then getting down and going to sit in the truck real quick to get the AC going. And I was like, God, this can't be my lot in life. It can't be. What else? And again, I wasn't even thinking about football. Mm-hmm. And at this time, I had already had SEC scholarship offers that I wasn't even thinking about.
Wow.
And in that moment, I realized I was like, it just like a light bulb went off, and it was like, oh, football. I was like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then I was like, Ole Miss had already offered me a scholarship, Florida State, Mississippi State, like all these schools had already offered me a scholarship. And I was just like, I'm done with this. And I got out the truck and went and quit my job right then and there.
Wow.
And went and sat back in the truck, told the boss I was done, sat in the truck until it was time to go because I couldn't call an Uber and leave. So I had to wait in the most awkward ride home because you get in there, you got all these
quit. I'm going to go sit.
I'm sitting in the truck.
4 more hours until y'all are ready to go.
Today was all packed up, ready to go. Got all these, you know, these old guys get in the truck and then and they giving you shit to... I can't say that.
You absolutely can say shit.
They're giving you shit about quitting and all this. And I just say, okay, whatever. And then I get out of the truck and I walk in the house and I tell my mom, I said, Mom, I know you depend on me to kind of help with some things, you know, financially, because I was making money to help her with stuff, pay for my stuff at school, and she didn't have to worry about that. I said, but I'm going to focus on football. I think I got to put some effort into this to see where it could take me. Mm-hmm. And the next day I was in the gym, I started to train. And that was my, going into my junior year, was like kind of like my like, and people think I'm like crazy when I say that, because even when I was getting drafted, I was same kind of mindset. I wasn't thinking about getting drafted to the NFL. I was thinking about, you know, getting a good education, getting a job, how many connections and people that I can, you know, get to know so I can get a good job. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, like this, my O-line coach sent off a ladder to the NFL junior committee. And they said, hey, we're projecting you to be a late first round or early second round draft pick. And I was just like, whatever, it's a center in the way. And they had just fired David Cutcliffe, brought in Ed Orgeron. And I talked to Ed the next day and he was like, what are you thinking about doing? And I was like, I'm coming back to school. I got a couple classes to finish. Like, what do you mean? He's like, well, I heard you got a good grade. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm coming back. I help you in recruiting or whatever. And fast forward to the next day, then I get a call from Archie Manning. He calls me and says, I hear you got a good grade. And I'm just like, yeah, I got a good grade, Archie. And he's like, well, let me do some calling around for you. And he called, you know, 10 GMs and then called me back the next day. And he's like, big guy's legit. And I'm just like,
wow.
All right, Archie, if I was your son, what would you do? And he was like, if you were my son, I'd tell you, you have to go. I was like, well.
Okay, Dad.
All right, I'm going. And I called my mom. I just said, hey, Mom, I'm going to NFL. I didn't even call and have a conversation about it. I just said, hey, I'm going to NFL.
You told her, yeah.
Yeah, Archie had already told me what I need to know. So long story short, like my mindset was always just like, you know, not really wrapped into football until it was like, real, like, man, I just signed this big contract. Okay, now, you know, I'm a first round draft pick. Mm-hmm. The pressure of like being a first round draft pick and not failing, it started to really kind of like pour in. And then I'm like, I can't embarrass his last name. Oh, I can't embarrass my family. I got
anxiety.
Oh, yeah. And then like, and I didn't realize it at the time. I was just kind of like, it just kind of happened. And then all of a sudden, as years went on, now looking back on it, I've started to really feel a lot of that pressure. So to answer your question from a workout standpoint, I don't train the way that I used to. I train different, you know. I'm doing Pilates now.
Oh, do you have like, when you're kind of getting in the zone to work out, do you have like a pump up jam that you like to listen to? What's your workout playlist? Yeah.
I got to answer that.
Yeah. We can cut it if it's embarrassing.
Yeah. We can cut like, it all.
I don't know what's embarrassing.
I mean, believe it or not,
Taylor Swift.
Along that genre. believe it or not, my playlist is like a country and R&B playlist. It's not like headbangers or anything like that. It's just things that I can like, I like to sing and it takes my mind off of lifting. And so headbanging, it just distracts me. I've had so many injuries that I have to have like a lock-in focus on like my lifts. And so
how everything feels.
Right. Yeah. So like if I'm listening to like crazy loud music, then I can't focus on like the actual movement of the lift. And so, I listen to a lot of country and R&B.
Okay.
To my playlist. Yeah.
I see you're not naming any artists, so
It's probably quite a sight for a random stranger like in the gym. like to see someone with your stature and be like, I wonder what he's listening to in there.
Yeah. Well, I used to
he's just like bobbing along. Meanwhile, I'm listening to like
I'm listening to Teardrop on my guitar.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I'm listening to.
Wow.
It's funny because I had to stop going to the gym because people always want to challenge you. And
challenge you?
Yeah, because I would go in and
like outlift you?
No, and it's they're trying to call you out because I wasn't lifting heavy weights anymore. And so it's like, well, that's all you can lift. You're a big guy. You should be lifting more. And then I found myself had to start telling people like, hey, bud, do you own a state record of squatting over 750 pounds? No? Okay. Shh.
Yeah. Also, my research shows that my mental performance is more important than my physical performance.
So I started, you know, having these conversations with people and they're like, well, you could bench more than that. Have you benched over 500 pounds? No. Okay. Shh. Don't talk to me. Have you played any professional sports? Okay. Don't talk to me. Mm-hmm. My elbows are sore now.
Have you had shoulder surgeries helping you for years and years?
Yeah.
Like in the professional sports industry before having done that? No. Okay.
Yeah. So now I have a gym at my house.
So no Planet Fitness for
you? No, no. I get up and go to my gym, work out. I can listen to
peace and quiet.
My Miley Cyrus and Taylor Swift and do my Pilates and no one bothers me.
It would be great if in the future you developed your product to a point where you could just begin to silently record someone as they come up to you and start that conversation and then just pull your phone out and be like, actually, show them how poor a communicator they are.
Mm-hmm. That's funny.
How tall are you?
6'3" and a half.
So how do you fit on a Pilates reformer? Or do you have a special?
What are they meant? Hold on. Is that the machine on the ground that you...
Yes. It slides back and forth with like springs.
It's only meant for a certain height of person?
Well, it's just, I mean, I'm 5'10 and I still find it hard. Like in Pilates classes, I have to move the end of it so that I can fit lengthwise.
Yeah.
Do you have a specially made one?
My instructor, she is really good at making adjustments because I'm always thinking that I'm going to get out of the reformer and she finds a way to get my body on there. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm doing this. And then within 5 minutes, I'm like pouring sweat. But there is a place I used to go to that has these big mega reformers that I used to go get on. And these things were like...
They're like jungle gyms.
Yeah, these things would kick your butt. But she finds ways and then we do a lot of stuff on the floor. And so like... Yeah. You know, not all
you make it work.
Not all traditional on the reformer, and also too like some of the stuff that you ladies can do that I have no idea. Like, how did I get so strong and I can't do these little simple movements? It's so hard, and you guys can do them all day, and I'm just like, can I please figure out how to do that?
Strength train for majority of my training, but I was like, okay, I should probably start introducing Pilates because it's an entirely different muscle group, tiny muscles in your core that you didn't even know existed. Yeah. Yeah. And then you get up in the morning, you're like, why does that hurt so bad?
Those muscles and the mobility aspect of it, that's the longevity. That's what I figured out in my career is I stopped lifting so heavy after I hurt my back and I trained core and I was still able to play 7 more years without lifting 700 some pounds. So I'm a firm believer in it.
Yeah. There's a lot of videos of football players now doing Pilates and they're all like convulsively shaking, dripping sweat. And I'm like, okay, that makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah. Because you could see guys aging. Just genetically just like ripped and abs and all these things. And they have a hard time holding a 30-second plank, you know. And so it's now has made its way through sports because of the injuries have gone up so much. Because of how much tension we're putting on the tendons and things like that and not having enough stability in the core to offset it. And so I don't think anybody would make fun of me now for doing Pilates.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I think you're secretly making fun of me over there. Like
he's looking up classes as we speak.
I struggle harder than you do on it. I guarantee it. It's Pilates is so hard. I just did it not last week, the week before.
Yeah.
I went to a Pilates class and it it ruined me. I felt like I was hit by a truck. Wow. Felt like the first day of pads.
Yeah. It's tough.
After.
It's tough. I love it though. Because I've spent so much time with my core now, I can do a lot of the crazy mm-hmm. things that you're like, how is this big body doing?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for coming. And we've learned a lot. We know you're a busy man, so we'll let you get back to it. But thank you all for watching. We'll catch you next time.